Imagine you finally find your absolute dream home. You know, you've spent years saving up.
Right, doing everything right.
Exactly. Your income is solid. Your credit score is like right where it needs to be. So you go to the bank, you apply for the mortgage, and a computer just spits out a flat no.
Ouch.
And it won't tell you why. It doesn't offer any advice on what to fix. It just says no. How do you actually know the machine made a fair choice?
It's a terrifying scenario, but I mean, it is increasingly the reality of modern finance, healthcare, and hiring. We're trusting these massive systems that we just cannot always see inside of.
Welcome to this deep dive. Our mission today is to really explore this fascinating stack of sources we've gathered. We're looking at everything from, heavy academic frameworks on ethical values to highly technical lectures on AI systems.
Yeah, it's a really diverse set of materials.
It is. And we're going to figure out how messy, complicated human morals somehow get translated into cold, hard code, and, well, what actually happens when those machines start making massive decisions about your life.
Because they absolutely are making those decisions right now.
Right. And, tech and philosophy often feel like two completely different worlds, but today's sources really smash them right
They
together.
absolutely have to collide because, well, before we can understand how a machine denies you a loan, we first have to step back and understand how a machine even understands a concept like fairness in the first place.
Which is wild to think about.
Right. Humans have debated what is right and wrong for millennia. And now we're basically forcing software engineers to just quantify it.
Yeah, put a number on it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the source material lays out a structure for this, suggesting we really have to look at ethics through three distinct layers of translation.
Okay, let's unpack this a bit, because if we're translating ethics, there obviously has to be a starting point. I'm assuming the first layer is just like the human element.
Precisely. The first layer is what the sources call the lived experience.
Right.
This is how you and I actually feel and experience an ethical value in practice. It's that visceral, intuitive gut reaction, you know.
Like when something just feels wrong.
Exactly. You don't need a math degree to know when a decision feels unjust. You just feel it.
But a computer doesn't have a gut. I mean, it only has processors and memory.
Yeah, cold hardware.
Right. Which means we have to somehow turn that subjective feeling into math. And trying to quantify human ethics for a machine feels like, I don't know, trying to write a mathematical formula for falling in love.
Oh, that's a great way to put it.
Isn't it impossible to turn moral intuition into a strict equation without losing, like, the very essence of what makes it moral?
Well, what's fascinating here is that the sources actually validate your exact pushback.
Yeah.
That friction you're talking about creates what academics call moral uncertainty.
Moral uncertainty.
Yeah, and it leads to a massive challenge known as value alignment. Because you're right, turning feeling into math is the second layer, which is the technical definition.
And how do they actually do that?
This is where developers have to take that squishy, intuitive human value and formalize it. They literally have to encode it into a computational system.
Which sounds incredibly difficult.
It is. To do that, the sources highlight how developers draw on really advanced philosophical frameworks, things like deontology, teleology, and consequentialism, basically to write the objective functions of the AI.
Wait, let me pause you right there because those are some really heavy terms. Let's ground this for a second. If I'm coding an AI, how do those specific philosophies actually change the math?
Good question. Let's look at the mechanics of it. So, deontology is a rules-based approach to ethics.
Okay, rules-based.
Right. If a developer uses a deontological framework, they are hard-coding strict constraints into the algorithm. It is a very rigid system of absolute do's and don'ts.
So mathematically, what does that look like?
Mathematically, it looks like a series of rigid conditional statements, like if X happens, then never do Y. The AI cannot break that rule no matter what the outcome is.
Oh, okay. It's like a GPS navigating you to a destination.
How so?
Like, deontology cares that you stayed on the legally paved roads and obeyed the speed limit, even if following those rules means it takes you 3 hours to get there. The rules are the priority.
Yes, that is a brilliant way to picture it. Now, compare that to teleology, which is purpose-driven, or consequentialism, which is entirely outcome-based.
Outcome-based, so it just wants the result.
Exactly. If a developer builds a consequentialist AI, they aren't giving it a list of strict behavioral rules like the deontological one. Instead, they give it an objective function.
Which is what, a goal?
Yeah, a mathematical goal to maximize. The AI's only directive is to look at the data, calculate probabilities, and choose the path that yields the highest score for that specific goal.
So back to the GPS metaphor, consequentialism just cares that you arrived at your destination as fast as mathematically possible.
Right.
It doesn't care if it drove you through a muddy ditch, across someone's front lawn, and like the wrong way down a one-way street. It just optimized for the outcome.
That's exactly it. And when developers write an objective function, say, they want to maximize the number of approved loans that will be successfully repaid over 30 years.
Which makes sense for a bank.
Right. They want the best outcome for the bank. So they're usually relying on a consequentialist framework. But that framework creates that tension we talked about between human intuition and machine representation.
Because the machine's values might not align with ours. I mean, squeezing all that human complexity into a single optimization goal inevitably strips away the nuance of the lived experience.
Yes, exactly.
The AI might find a highly efficient way to maximize loan repayments, but its method might completely trample over our human intuition of what actually feels fair.
The very act of translating a lived experience into a technical definition means you are forcing a mathematical parameter onto a philosophical concept. The machine only knows the variables it's given to optimize.
Which brings us to the ultimate crash test. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have the lived experience, we have the technical definition, where we write the actual code, and then we deploy it. We basically let the GPS start driving.
The third layer. Real-world functionality.
Right.
This is how that encoded value operates when it finally hits the messy, unpredictable reality of human life. Because, you know, theoretical frameworks sound completely flawless in a pristine coding environment.
Oh, sure. In a lab, everything works.
Exactly. But under pressure, in the real world, this is where edge cases surface these really intense ethical dilemmas.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though. If we're using a consequentialist approach, right, and we give an AI an objective function to, quote, maximize successful loans.
Yep.
The AI obviously needs data to learn what a successful loan even looks like, so we feed it decades of historical human banking data.
Mountains of data.
But aren't we just automating and amplifying our own historical biases at that point? Like, are we actually teaching them ethics, or are we just teaching them our flaws?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, you have just described the mechanical root of algorithmic bias.
Mm.
Because the machine isn't consciously malicious. It doesn't have prejudice. It is just a mathematical engine looking for correlations in the training data to satisfy its objective function. And human history, well, it's full of biased data.
Let's dig into the how of that, because I think people hear algorithmic bias and they imagine like a coder sitting in a dark room explicitly programming an AI to discriminate against a certain group of people.
Right, like a villain.
Yeah.
Right.
But it's much more subtle and probably more dangerous than that, right?
Much more. Let's look at how neural networks actually process variables. Imagine a bank historically denied loans to certain minority neighborhoods due to prejudiced human practices in the past.
Okay. Redlining, basically.
Exactly. Oh. Now, the AI is fed all this historical data and told, find the pattern of who gets approved and who defaults.
And obviously, it finds those historical patterns.
Right. Now, the AI doesn't know what race is. In fact, maybe the developers even explicitly removed race from the data set to be safe.
Which you would think solves the problem.
You'd think so. But the AI has thousands of other data points. It looks at zip codes. It looks at the number of years at a current address. It looks at the specific vocabulary used in employment histories.
Oh, I see where this is going. And it realizes that, say, zip code A has a historically low approval rate in the training data.
Exactly. It uses the zip code as what we call a proxy variable.
A proxy variable.
Right. The mathematical weights inside the neural network shift. The AI decides, based purely on optimizing for past success, that applicants from zip code A are statistically risky. So it confidently denies loans to anyone from that neighborhood.
Just writing them all off.
Yeah. And it thinks it is doing a spectacular job hitting its consequentialist goal.
Because it's succeeding wildly at the technical definition we gave it, but failing catastrophically at the ethical lived experience we expect from it.
Exactly. And this is precisely why the sources stress that we just can't let these automated systems run blind. If an AI assigns a massive negative weight to a proxy variable like a zip code, the outcome is just systemic discrimination disguised as objective math.
Because the math itself isn't racist, but the outcome absolutely is.
Right. And if we don't deeply understand the real-world functionality of the algorithm, we can't fix that algorithmic bias.
We have to pop the hood, basically.
We do.
Which is vital, because these biases have severe real-world consequences. We're talking about the trajectory of a person's life here.
Getting the capital to start a small business?
Yes. Or being approved for a life-saving medical procedure. securing housing.
Yeah.
We absolutely have to know the actual mechanism behind the machine's choices.
And this creates a desperate need for the core concept of our sources today, explainability.
Explainability, let's get into that.
It is basically a demand to open the black box. The formal definition of explainability in AI systems is very specific in the literature.
Okay, how do they define it?
It's defined as the ability to describe why and how an output was produced in the language of the various stakeholders.
So what does this all mean in practice? Let's go back to our listener who's applying for that mortgage. They get a no from the AI.
Right, the flat no.
Getting a rejection from a black box system is like, I don't know, it's like getting an F on a massive final exam, but the professor completely refuses to tell you which questions you got wrong. Or even show you a rubric.
That's incredibly frustrating.
It's maddening. How are you supposed to fix your mistakes if the professor only speaks in advanced calculus and you speak English? How is the listener supposed to fix it if they don't speak the machine's language?
That is exactly why the definition explicitly mentions the language of the various stakeholders. Explainability isn't just a one-size-fits-all answer. It changes completely depending on who is asking the question.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. If the bank emails you a 50-page document filled with raw neural network weights, gradient descent calculations, and matrix multiplication,
I would immediately throw that in the trash.
Exactly. But that is technically an explanation of the machine's decision. It's just utterly useless to you. It's not in your language.
That makes a lot of sense. The information I need as a consumer is radically different from the information a software engineer needs.
100%.
And the sources break this down into three distinct functions based on the three main stakeholders. So let's tackle the first one, the consumer, the person standing there at the bank teller window.
So the first component is called interpretability. This is explainability designed specifically for the user or the consumer.
Okay, interpretability.
Right, and it focuses entirely on the what and deliberately ignores the how. As a consumer, you don't care about proxy variables or objective functions or the mathematical weights of the neural network.
Right. I just want to know what input I actually need to change to get a different output. Was my bank balance too low? Do I not have enough savings? Just tell me what to do.
Exactly. In the technical field, this is often provided through what are called counterfactual explanations.
Counterfactual explanations.
Yeah. Interpretability is the system's ability to isolate the key variables and say to you, look, if your savings account had been $2,000 higher and your credit card debt was $500 lower, the output would have been yes.
Oh, wow. I like that because it gives the user agency. It translates this giant wall of complex code into an actionable checklist for a normal person.
It empowers the user to navigate the system without needing to hold a degree in computer science.
But, and this is a big but, if you do hold a degree in computer science and you built the system,
a counterfactual explanation isn't going to be enough for you.
Exactly. You need the second stakeholder component. Transparency.
Transparency is for the developer. Okay. So if interpretability is the what, transparency has to be the how.
Yes. How does the machine actually process and weigh the data? When people broadly discuss AI explainability in the news, this is usually what they really mean.
Right. They want to see the code. Let's say our mortgage AI is consistently approving loans for people who inevitably default within 2 years, and it's costing the bank millions. The developers need transparency to forensically examine the inner mechanics of the tool.
They need to see those weights we talked about earlier.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They dive into what's called feature importance. They might discover that the AI heavily weighted the applicant's number of active credit cards, but assigned almost zero weight to consistent employment history.
Which is obviously a terrible way to evaluate a loan.
Right. But transparency allows the engineer to physically see that the machine's consequentialist goal is misaligned with reality. They can then adjust the weights, retrain the model, and actually fix the mechanism itself.
Okay, so if interpretability empowers the consumer to act, and transparency empowers the developer to fix the code, neither of those really solves the problem when the bank gets sued for discrimination.
Ah, no, they don't.
Right, because if that proxy variable we talked about earlier, the zip code, results in a massive lawsuit, regulators don't just want to know how it happened, they want to know who is to blame.
Which brings us to the third and most complex stakeholder component. Accountability.
Accountability.
This is explainability for the lawyer, the auditor, and the bank. It focuses entirely on fault. If a wrong decision is made, one that causes tangible harm, whose fault is it? Where concretely did the error come from in the pipeline?
See, I have to push back hard on this one.
Okay, let's hear it.
Because wait, if a machine trained itself on millions of data points from dozens of different brokers over years and then adapted its own weights using machine learning, how can a lawyer ever pin the blame on one specific coder or data seller?
It's incredibly difficult.
Isn't accountability in AI essentially just an illusion at that point? It's just pointing fingers in a massive circle.
This raises an important question, and honestly, the sources emphasize that this is perhaps the single thorniest issue in AI ethics today. Tracing a fault through an AI pipeline is incredibly convoluted.
I mean, the person who wrote the code isn't even necessarily the person who gathered the data.
Yep.
Exactly. Let's walk through that pipeline. A regulator has to ask, was the architecture of the algorithm itself flawed?
Right.
If so, the fault lies with the AI designers. But what if the developers wrote a mathematically perfect algorithm, but the training data used to teach the machine contained that historical zip code bias?
Then the math is fine, but the textbook it learned from is basically poisoned.
Right. So do you sue the data broker who sold the flawed data set?
Or do you hold the bank accountable? Because, I mean, the bank's executives purchased the AI, they implemented it, and they chose to rely on its outputs without having, you know, sufficient human oversight.
Exactly. The pipeline from data production to algorithm design to corporate implementation is just vast. Drawing a straight line from human fault to machine error requires a phenomenal level of accountability documentation.
Like, every single step of the data's lifecycle has to be logged, justified, and auditable.
Because without accountability, there is no legal recourse when the system inevitably breaks down. If nobody is at fault, the machine simply becomes a shield for corporations to hide behind. We didn't deny your loan because of bias. The algorithm just determined you were a risk. Don't blame us, blame the math.
That is a chilling thought, but it happens.
It really highlights how deeply intertwined this technology is with human society. We build these systems under the guise of making things faster, more efficient, and supposedly mathematically objective.
Supposedly.
But because math lacks a human gut, because it lacks that lived experience of ethics, we end up having to engineer these massive secondary frameworks of interpretability, transparency, and accountability just to translate the machine's logic back into human terms.
And if we fail to demand those translations, we surrender our reality to the technical definition encoded inside the black box. The machine's output just becomes the undisputed truth.
Which brings us back to where we started today. Bringing it all together, the next time you interact with an automated system, whether you're applying for a mortgage or getting a credit limit increase or having an algorithm screen your resume for a job, you weren't just dealing with math.
Not at all. You are interacting with a highly complex web of translated ethics.
Yeah, you're being evaluated by consequentialist objective frameworks, rigid encoded constraints, and neural networks carrying the heavy, invisible weights of historical human biases, layers of interpretability and transparency.
And hopefully you are interacting with a system built by developers who respected the need for explainability.
Absolutely. Because if they didn't, that flat no you get from the machine isn't just a rejection. It is an impenetrable wall. It is the exact point where human understanding ends and blind algorithmic authority takes over.
We have to continually force the machines to speak our language, or we will eventually be forced to live by theirs.
That leaves us with a lot to process. To wrap up this deep dive, we want to leave you with one final thought, a philosophical dilemma that builds on everything we've unpacked today, but really forces a new choice.
This is a tough one.
Imagine an AI system deployed in hospitals globally. It analyzes patient scans and cross-references them with millions of medical records. It gives perfectly accurate, completely unbiased medical diagnoses.
Sounds great so far.
Right. It catches microscopic tumors that human doctors miss, saving tens of thousands of lives every single year. And here's the catch. The neural network is so advanced, it has evolved into a complete and total black box.
So no transparency.
Absolutely zero transparency for the developers. They cannot see the feature weights. There is zero interpretability for the patients. It cannot provide a counterfactual explanation.
It just gives you the answer.
It simply prints out, you have this illness, and it is always right. It cannot explain its work. Do you choose the ethical good of life-saving, flawless accuracy? Or do you choose the ethical good of human accountability and understanding?
Hmm.
In the end, would you trust a perfect machine that completely refuses to explain itself? Thanks for taking this deep dive with us. We'll see you next time.